I think we left off last time at page 2, paragraph 2. Three heads and eight arms may be yesterday's time. An 8 or 16 foot body may be today's time. Yet yesterday and today are both in the moment when you directly enter the mountains and see myriads of peaks. Directly entering the mountains implies this direct experience. And I don't know if Dogen has some particular intention here, but in Mountains and Waters Sutra, Dogen's celebration of nature, in that Shobo Genzo essay, Dogen seems to be using mountains and waters as metaphors for form and emptiness. Mountains as the solid form, and they move over the water, and water is ungraspable, unsolid flowing. Again, if you read that fascicle, he doesn't explicitly say that, but it seems to be one of the implications. So if we hear it that way, we could hear directly entering the mountains as directly entering this form, this being, as opposed to directly entering like non-being. Directly entering the mountains and seeing myriads of peaks. So this particular Dharma position of the moment, directly entering that in its full expression of manifested form. So at that time, when directly entering the mountains and seeing myriads of peaks, yesterday and today are both in such a moment. In this, again, this Dharma position that fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. It includes yesterday and today. These are just continuing with these themes of all-inclusiveness. Yesterday's time and today's time do not go away. They're not just gone. That the present fully includes the past and the future. Three heads and eight arms move forward as your time being. It looks as if they're far away, but they're here and now. All of this past and future is manifesting here and now. The 8 or 16 foot body moves forward as your time being. It looks as if it's nearby, but it is exactly here. Thus, a pine tree is time, bamboo is time. In Asia, pine trees represent longevity. Ancient pines, I guess they are long-lasting trees. Isn't it the bristlecone pine is it Death Valley?
It's in the White Mountains.
White Mountains?
Off the Owens Valley.
But is it near there?
It's the desert. Two ridges over from Death Valley,
Southern California desert.
Oldest.
Yeah, oldest tree in the whole world, right?
That's not true anymore.
No.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's one that they found in Norway, I believe.
Really?
Northern Norway.
Uh-huh. A bristlecone pine?
It's very similar to that. Uh-huh. And apparently, I don't know the whole story, but from isotopes it looks as it's 11,000 years old. I don't know. It's incredible.
So there's some old trees out there.
There are some old trees. But that's too bad that California no longer has the...
Sorry, I
California has the tallest tree and the largest tree.
And the second oldest.
And the second oldest?
Yes. Now, well, now we know.
Yes.
We like Europe. It's okay.
But it sounds like it's a pine, the pine family anyway. Mm-hmm. So pine, very, very ancient.
Yeah.
Ancient includes much, much time being in that one moment of Bristlecone and pine. And a bamboo grows so fast, marked by those nodes. In Japan, the temple I was had this, you know, one of the those bamboo forests of like the giant bamboo. Right? They're like this big around. They can get to be in like 30 feet, probably taller, 30, 40 feet tall. Bamboo is grass, right? Mm-hmm. But that's like some big grass. And you could hear it growing on summer days. It would kind of crack as it came up, and you'd see those giant, those are those shoots that they harvest. Huge, huge. And those big ones especially, you could come back the next day and it would be, I don't know if it's a foot taller, but like they grow fast. And I don't know how long they live, but they grow fast and it's kind of like quick growing compared to the pine. So pine tree is time, bamboo is time. It's not a matter of fast growing, short growing, long life, short life. They're all time. And your time being. So I'm not sure about at this point, but definitely later in the next paragraph when they say your time being, it's actually emphasized, it's the character for like the selves or my or your, but basically a possessive character. So that's another little twist here that I don't think has come up yet, that the time being we're talking about and the Dharma position of the moment is your particular time being and my particular time being. It's not like there's a kind of general time being or a general Dharma position. It's a very personal, you could say, personal thing. Or from the perspective of mind only. Personal doesn't mean that there's some independent self that's like a fixed, independent, individual time being, but it's just that the time being that we're experiencing, that each of us is experiencing, is this particular mind version of time being. That's how I hear this, it's your time being and my time being. It's like we can't, even though your time being and my time being are completely interdependent and can meet in a sense, they're still, just like we were talking about, the way a four-year-old experiences the time being is different from my 45-year-old time being. It's like our time beings depend on each other, but they're each our own. Each of our own minds is creating its own time being. Mm-hmm. So do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. Flies away like it's gone. Then you would be separated from the past. So it doesn't merely fly away, gone. The reason you do not clearly understand the time being is that you think of time only as passing. In essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments. Because all moments are the time being, they are your time being. This is where it actually says your there is like my or the self's time being. The time being has the quality of flowing. So this is a little different than flying away. You're literally like flying, which I don't know if they say that in Japanese and Chinese, the time flies, but we definitely say that in English. Time flies away. But now time being also has the quality of flowing. So Dogen's been kind of discussing the time being as each phenomena abiding in its dharma position, which includes past and future, but it doesn't really... We might have this question, well, what about this sense that time flows along? How does this movement happen? So this term flowing, kyoraku, means also like regeneration or passage or even transmission. So-called today flows into tomorrow. I like that so-called, what we call today actually flows into tomorrow. Or today is transmitted to tomorrow. Today flows into yesterday, yesterday flows into today, and today flows into today, tomorrow flows into tomorrow. Because flowing is a quality of time, moments of past and present do not overlap or line up side by side. So this flowing, past, present, and future we have in this sense of flowing, and we have this teaching from the Huayan tradition that Dogen may be actually picking up on here because it seems very similar. Huayan is a Chinese way of, literally means flower ornament, Huayan, or Keigon in Japanese. And in Sanskrit, its flower ornament is Avatamsaka. So it's the Avatamsaka school, Huayan, based on this flower ornament sutra that some of you may know. It's one of those huge 1,000-page Mahayana cosmic sutras that just, and which this whole later school of Buddhism was based on, because it's so dynamic and you know, it's a whole other topic we could get into at some point, but you know, there's the Prajnaparamita Mahayana sutras, like the Heart Sutra, are really emphasizing emptiness and non-being, whereas the Flower Ornament Sutra, the Avatamsaka Sutra, is emphasizing more like dependent arising and interconnectedness, and it's this positive description of all these world systems built upon world systems and interpenetration of all things. Like the jewel net of Indra, that image of the Indra is sometimes said to be like the pre-Buddhist like creator of the universe. So Indra's net of jewels is like, you know, a net where each knot is a jewel reflecting all the other jewels on each other knot of this infinite net. And so the jewel net of Indra is like everything is inter-reflecting everything else and interconnected in this vast, inconceivable web of interconnectedness, which you could say Prajnaparamita, it's there too, but as the Heart Sutra emphasizes, just negating the Avatamsaka Sutra emphasizes like interpenetration, interrelation. And so teachers in this school commenting on the sutra brought up various points. So this is this book, Entry into the Inconceivable, an introduction to Huayan, one of the classical Chinese teachers. Yes?
You said Huayan and then you quickly went to Avatamsaka. I missed
Same one. Thing. Huayan is Chinese for Avatamsaka.
The Avatamsaka, yeah. The big old Avatamsaka, yeah. Sutra, yeah. They call Huayan.
So in Sanskrit, Avatamsaka, uh-huh. In Chinese translates to Huayan. Uh-huh. In Japanese is Keigon, and in English is flower ornament.
Okay.
So literally, an Avatamsaka may be some more flowery Sanskrit term than just flower ornament, I'm not sure, but literally, Huayan literally means flower ornament.
And Keigon.
And
Keigon. Gon?
Gon, G-O-N, G-O-N in Japanese. It's the same... the Lotus Sutra is the Dharma Flower. In Chinese, they call it the Dharma Flower Sutra. So the Fa Hua school is the Lotus Sutra or school in Chinese, and the Hokke is the Japanese name of the Lotus Sutra. So Ke means flower. Mm-hmm. Ho is Dharma. So this is this essay by Juryen. I'm not sure when this school developed. I think this was before the golden age of Zen in China, so 7th century. It's pretty far back there. When did these guys live? Yeah, 600s, 700s. So, you know, Bodhidharma was 500. So actually this was around the same time that the sixth ancestor was living and the Zen Chan was starting to flourish in China. And very related, I bring this up partly because it's this somewhat obscure school in American Buddhism. I don't know if there's any... I don't think there's a existing Huayan or Kagon school in China or Japan as far as like a separate sect of practice. They, if you've been to Japan, to Nara, has anyone been to Nara? That it's the old capital of Japan, and that there they have the, it's the largest wooden building in the world. We're talking about large things. The largest, not the largest wooden tree, but the largest wooden building, apparently, as I've heard. And it's like inside, it's like, you know, the full, it must be 10 stories tall or something, just open, one giant open room, basically, and built, you know, many, many centuries ago. It's amazing that it's still there. And that's where they, it's also known for inside, there's this giant Vairochana Buddha, also maybe made of gold or something, many stories tall, one of the big Buddhas of the world. There's birds flying around inside the temple, you know, it's giant. And that's was originally a Huayan Kagon temple, which Vairochana Buddha is like one of the main Buddhas of the Avatamsaka Sutra, so he's enshrined there. So I don't think there's like a separate school where people are ordained into the Kagon school anymore, although that temple's mostly like just a museum now. It's still there. Juryen in China wrote the 10 mysterious gates of the unitary vehicle of the flower ornament. And the fifth gate here. Fifth is the gate of various becoming of separate things in the 10 time frames. This is like talking about time according to this flower ornament vision. This is explained in terms of the three times, past, present, future. as it says in the chapter on detachment from the world, and you can read this in Thomas Cleary's Flower Ornament Sutra, there's a chapter called Detachment from the World, and he quotes it here too. The 10 time frames are... You want to make any guesses what the 10 times are? Knowing what the 3 times are?
Past, present, future.
Past to the past. Present to the past. Future to the past. Past to the present. Present. Future to the present. Past to the future. Present to the future. Future to the future. And all that put together is the 10.
Wow.
Harry.
Harry.
When she's read.
I'm impressed.
For 3 years.
Yeah, it's one of those through. It's one of those 3-year sutras, oh, you know, to read. That's great. Yes, exactly. That's the 10 times of the Flower Ornament Sutra. You did a very quick rendition there. This is to hear it quoted in the sutra. The 10 time frames are the past of the past, the future of the past, the present of the past, the present of the present, the future of the present, the past of the present, the future of the future, the past of the future, the present of the future, and considering the three time frames as one instant, actually is the way they put it there. Summing up the preceding nine, making 10. And you could say, well, that's just like playing around with just multiplying things, and, you know, 3 times 3 is 9 and so on. But you could actually start breaking these down and think about what, how they might, you know, play out, what they might actually be. Like the future of, let's see, the past of the past is the past. That's like thinking about in the past, had a past, and the present of the past. So in the past, when the past, at the time of the past, it was present. And then it had a future, that you could say that the past's future is the present of the present. This might be one way of looking at it. And it might get much more dynamic than that too. I think Tigan even has a little reference to this where he... he talks about what this might be, how one might see these different times. Taigen, in his book Visions of Awakening, Time and Space, so related issue, he brings up this YN essay and on the Avatamsaka Sutra, and says that the past of the present is also the past of a future. The present of the future will be intimately connected to the future of this present, yet is not necessarily predetermined or limited by this present's future. By shifting prior views of the past, one might reclaim the past in the present, and thus actually change the meaning of the past and present for the sake of the future. Do you follow that, Sam?
Read that one more.
By shifting prior views of the past, like we had it, like yesterday this horrible thing happened to me, you know, now that's past, but yesterday I had this view that the past, that yesterday was really a bad day, but by shifting that prior view of the past today, saying, well, let's just say that actually that wasn't such a bad day after all. Then we might say, one might reclaim the past in the present and thus actually change the meaning of the past and present for the sake of the future, so that tomorrow we'll wake up happy that 2 days ago our day wasn't so bad. For example, you know, you could play with this yourself and all the different ways it could play out. I think this is just Taigen trying to imagine, like, that it's not just a word play here, that there's, you could actually practice the interrelationship of these three or 10 times in this way. History is the changing process of defining the past for the present. That's actually what it is. It may be realized that the history of the future can be rewritten in the present as well as in the future. And how we will see this present present in the future present, or saw it in the past, affects the reality of this present. So how, and again, thinking of how the mind, our conception of everything happening in these times, is actually creating the reality of what we call the past and the future and the present. It's a very flexible situation.
Mm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I woke up and had all these different days where there probably was a lot of past.
Yeah, probably.
I don't remember it in detail. It's kind of less of it than there is present.
You could even say, as we get older, maybe there's less and less past.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Alzheimer's or something like that. There's, the past is decreasing until there's actually maybe only the present.
Mm-hmm. That's my experience with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she doesn't even remember what job she had.
Mm.
But, and she simply, you know, rests in the present a lot.
It could be a somewhat helpful disease for meditators. If things are taken care of for you, to really be able to just be present. I once met somebody at Tassajara. I don't know if he had Alzheimer's. It seemed like something like that. It was a guest visiting, but he had been a Zen practitioner for years and years. I think at Rochester Zen Center, not through San Francisco, but he would come there on his vacation, and his wife was there to take care of his needs and so on. He probably could have managed, you know, just walking around and going along with the schedule. I think a lot of people get scared and disturbed when they realize that they can't remember more and more. But this guy, I think because of his practice, it really struck me that he was totally at ease, at least when I interacted with him, with the fact that he didn't really know what was going on, and he was just going with it. And he thought I was somebody else. I never met him before, and he just, "Hey, Joe, how's it going? It's been a long time." Like, "Oh, no, my name's not Joe." And he's like, "Well, that's okay. So, Joe." And he would just, but I sort of became a friend of his, because I kind of went with his story. And he had various strange Zen things that he would say. And it just struck me like, wow, here's someone who actually is sort of losing his mind, but he's just enjoying the present. He'd always be swimming in the pool and just be like, "Look at this, it's all just amazing." So I think there are such possibilities. Maybe as we practice in the present now, our future present could be such.
I had an interesting experience. I took walks, care of someone with Alzheimer's, and he seemed to be reliving his past. So he can make his past his present. He was back in his job. He had when he was 35 and talked about it all the time.
So in a way, he was that was like the present past. He was living in something like that. Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. Could happen too. Mm-hmm. Get stuck in a certain frame. But you can see how, again, it's like the storehouse consciousness. And you could say, even though that's not some real thing, just as the image of the storehouse of all past experiences, you could say these physical diseases start affecting the way that storehouse consciousness is processing stuff. So it might start, huge sections would be like, the electronic doorway into the seed section of past might be just like blocked by physical disease or something. But then there still seems to be this potential, like all that experience is still in the present, but maybe we just lose access to it in practical access to it at some point. let's see. So that was the sutra was quoted, and then Juryan, the one who wrote this essay, says, "In this way, the 10 time frames, by virtue of dependent co-arising, interdependent origination, mutually identify and even mutually interpenetrate yet without losing the three time frames. So this reminds me now again of the a Dharma position, which is more like a Dogen talks of as a more spatial thing, or a manifestation of being that fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. I think it's actually a time being moment, but here particularly time fully includes past and future, yet is independent of past and future. So these three or ten times mutually interpenetrate, yet without losing the three time frames. It's like they don't just become this mush of like soup of time. It's like there's this, I think that's how Dharma position is. It's like this unique, specific, momentary expression that's far from mush. It's like this. It's like totally clear, perfectly manifesting, never before, never again moment of experience. And yet it fully includes all other time and space as well. And the way this is so is ultimately inconceivable. You know, how, well, shouldn't it just become mush then? Mush or soup? Some kind of blended all together? Well, no. Then if it's a specific, then how could it include all that? The way that is there's a title here, Entry into the Inconceivable.
Well, that's just what Dogen just said in a couple of sections prior. When he says, know that in this way there are myriads of forms and hundreds of grasses throughout the entire earth, and yet each grass and each form itself is the entire earth. The study of this is the beginning of practice. Right? Maybe that's just a couple of sections.
Great, back. Yeah.
And I love how it just kind of keeps presenting or inviting you to present the same point, but in a different, with a different approach.
Slightly different approaches.
So keep rediscovering.
The vast whole and the particular back and forth, back and forth.
And that's always what we struggle with. How can that be?
Yeah.
How can it be this and that? It's
yeah.
Well, because it is.
Because it must be, yes. And then Juryen says, it's like the five fingers making a fist, yet not losing fingerhood. I really like
that's
that image.
That's yeah. There you go. See? Form and emptiness.
Yeah. And each finger abiding in its Dharma position. So five Dharma positions. And there's one Dharma position here. Each finger doesn't lose its fingerhood, even though there's one fist. So it's a great image, I think, for this Avatamsaka image. Though the ten time frames are simultaneous, yet the ten time frames are not lost. Therefore, the sutra says... Again, he quotes the sutra, saying, past eons, or kalpas, enter the future. The present eon enters the past. Future eons enter the present. It also says, long eons enter short eons. Short eons enter long eons. Existent eons enter non-existent eons. Non-existent eons enter eons. This is kind of the flavor of this flower ornament sutra. It might go on for several pages, like in those kind of... It's nice to chant out loud, actually. It's a good sutra for that. At Green Gulch Farm on New Year's Eve, we would recite that sutra. Remember that? For maybe like 7 or 8 hours on New Year's Eve, and then we'd like mark that page for the next year. And after maybe 5 years, you could actually, I think you could get through. Maybe it was more than 5 years. I know you can chant the entire Lotus Sutra in 8 hours. Sometimes we would do that in one day. But the Avatamsaka Sutra is probably 10 times longer or more. So I think of the past kalpas, so enter the present kalpa. And Dogen elsewhere talks about, we have Ibashi Butsu Daiyosho, like these, when we chant the names of the lineage, we start with the seven past Buddhas. So there's six names of Buddhas, which I think is so great that like in our lineage, whether or not it's historical, there's at least these names starting with Shakyamuni Buddha. But actually, it doesn't start with Shakyamuni Buddha. It starts with Vibhashin Buddha, or in Japanese, Vibhashi Butsu Daiyosho, from like some past Kalpa. So it's saying that this is not even just this world system, this Zen lineage that comes right down to the present is like from ancient past eons. Shakyamuni Buddha is like the seventh name on the list. So like these past, and then Dogen, when he's talking about these ancestors, talks about how Vibhashi Butsu is, you know, right here, like Shakyamuni Buddha transmitted Dharma to Vibhashin Buddha in his past Kalpa. Like the directionality is not linear. And they're all presently abiding in the time being. It also says, the sutra, that inexhaustible countless eons can be one moment, not long, not short. The sphere of liberated people is like this. The 10 time frames interpenetrate and interidentify, yet without losing the characteristics of succession and duration. Therefore, it is said that separate things variously become. So, they're like, doesn't become static either. They don't lose the characteristics of succession and duration, these qualities of time flowing, which I think Dogen's getting into now. It's hard enough just to grapple with these ideas of this one moment containing all moments, but then our images of that is like, well, it's just a static thing. Let's try to get a hold of it, mentally get a hold of it as in this static way. But actually the whole thing is flowing at the same time also. Yes.
Because this whole issue of flowing kind of baffles my mind when I think of arising and ceasing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But... So all this 10
times,
10 times, all these 10 times. So is the flowing kind of between all these 10 times, maybe?
It seemed like that's what he said, right? So called today. That's a little hint that like today is like it's just this name we have for this particular thing that's not really limited to some real today, fixed today, but so-called, what we call today flows into tomorrow, and today flows into yesterday, yesterday flows into today. Yeah, it seems like this flowing is, we might think that first he's going to say, okay, well, the past flows into the present, but actually mutual flowing. And again, you know, at the beginning, the traditional explanation of change is that there's not actually things changing into other things. There's this arising and ceasing, which doesn't sound so much like flowing. Yeah. Is that maybe what you're referring to? So this is something more dynamic than that classical definition of which sounds more like almost more static, like there's a cessation. And there's cessation for a little bit, and then that's the condition for an arising, and then there's a cessation, and this is emphasizing maybe more like things appear to be flowing, and how if the way that arising and ceasing, dependent arising and dependent cessation, is working, is inconceivably flow also. Like it's not limited to our idea of like this kind of technical explanation of arise, that's a condition for cessation, that's a condition for arising. That's a kind of clunky verbal explanation. And yet to say, well, things change into other things is maybe even more clunky and conceptual. So I think that traditional explanation of things not changing but arising in cessation starts to break down our first take on, well, of course things change into other things. It starts to confront that common view, and then Dogen's talking about flowing here maybe confronts the old Buddhist view of arising and cessation. At least that's what kind of comes to mind looking at it now.
It's hard to pin down, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it's very hard.
I can see that it does just kind of loosen up that kind of a pull the rug out kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like arising and ceasing.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is this flowing that he means, or regeneration, rebirth of time? I mean, again, I don't know this kyo-raku in Chinese, the sense of that, that most translators are translate as flowing.
Kyo-raku is the actual word?
Yeah. It's two different characters that, you know, looking it up, it means combined something like regeneration or transmission or passage or even vitality.
Well, so, see, that's got a different sense.
Than flowing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Vitality.
Yeah. And transmission is almost like arising and ceasing. Like there's some, it's not like there's something that's being transmitted. It's like there's a, like a candle flame, you know, is a, this transmission of a lamp or a, the light of a candle is like this candle's lit and then this one goes out. And so this one actually ceases, that one's arisen. Actually, that in that case, it arose before this one ceased, but now this one ceases, and so, and then on and on, from candle to candle. But that we wouldn't normally call that flowing. The light isn't really flowing from one candle to another, but it's being regenerated, or transmitted, we could say.
Well, I think a river is like one of the best examples, because if you sit and stare at a river, you know, in the moment, you do see arising and ceasing. I mean, the water is just going, you know?
Yeah.
There are little molecules just jumping. But if you look at it from here, then it, you know, you see this.
Mm-hmm.
But it totally is just this little... So I think it's just, I think it's our, like you said, our clunky, linguistic, conceptual, like we're trying to understand it. We say arising and ceasing, and it sounds like a little mechanical thing, but it's not.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also not...
quality of some, you know.
And it's not really one river either. That's our, I think, our first take. Just like time, it's like there's this flow of time that we're living in. And we look from above down at the river. It's like, yeah, well, that's a river. We see it as a thing called a river. But then you look closer and it's like, even a moment later, it's not the same river at all. So, yeah, it's a flow... It's not the same river, and yet it's not totally different river. The river right at that moment depends on the previous river. So there's a very intimate relationship of the present river and the past river. And we could call that the dependently arising river, dependent on the past moment of river and all the past moments of river, because rivers go for what we call so-called long time. But yeah, you can look at it, look at them that way. I was looking at a ceiling fan yesterday somewhere, and it was like this almost kind of like optical illusion I could play with, because when which way was it? It's like I would, if I looked at it out of the corner of my eye, it seemed to be like moving really quickly. I forget which way it was. It seemed to be moving really quickly. And then I looked directly at it and be going really slow. And then I looked down here and I kept doing it. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Why is it doing that? It was like this, it was like a time illusion. which is kind of like the river. Like if you look at, if you, you know, are on a raft in the river, then it doesn't even look like it's going by. You're just like in this static thing moving along. And Zen is constantly playing with those metaphors, like the sayings, like the river doesn't flow, the bridge flows. The bridge over the river is flowing, and the river is still. Things like this. It's all, everything's a matter of perspective, and like where, what our Dharma position of the moment is gives us particular view that's just like, it's limited It's like we see and hear only as far as our eye of practice can reach.
Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the same as, I don't know if how it's in English, but the flying arrow is standing still?
Hmm. I haven't heard that one, but it sounds like the same thing, yeah. If you're on the arrow, or if you're sitting on an airplane, it doesn't seem like you're zipping through the sky, you're just sitting there, it's very still. But right now, the movement of the earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, it's super fast, we are flying through space, it's amazing all the like trees aren't being like ripped right off the earth, but it's actually just totally still. Mm-hmm. Seems like we're just sitting still. So all flowing is just flowing. Something like this. It's inconceivable, and it's like from each person's unique perspective. Moments of past and present do not overlap or line up side by side. So there's not overlapping or lining up, like each moment being distinct. And so there's another... Dogen actually deals with time quite a bit in the Shobo Genzo. So this is the ocean mudra samadhi, the ocean seal, concentration. Sagara mudra samadhi, the ocean seal concentration. And Dogen quotes the Buddha saying, I don't know where the Buddha... says some sutra, the Buddha says, elements come together and form this body. At the time of appearing, elements appear. At the time of disappearing, elements disappear. When elements appear, I do not say, I appear. This is a little commentary on self and no self. I, in quotes. When elements appear, I do not say, I appear. When elements disappear, I do not say, I disappear. So this is elements. We could say earth, wind, fire, water. We could say five skandhas. Elements might even be dharmas here, I'm not sure. It's not really that I appear and disappear. This is elements arising and disappearing. This is classic Buddhism. Past moments and future moments do not arise sequentially. Past elements and future elements do not arise in alignment. This is the meaning of the ocean mudra samadhi. So it seems similar to Dogen here saying that moments of past and future do not overlap or line up side by side in the ocean mudra samadhi. Past elements and future elements do not arise in alignment. And then Dogen comments on this saying of Buddha for a while in his usual way. Let's see, where he says, while the Buddha says, not sequential and not aligned, nevertheless, appearing arises in the beginning, middle, and end. This may be seen as officially not allowing a needle, but unofficially permitting carriages and horses to pass. I recall bringing up this saying recently. Do anyone remember that? We talked about this officially not even a needle can enter, but unofficially heart... horses and carts can pass through. In the beginning, middle, and end, disappearing is neither sequential nor aligned. Although elements appear all of a sudden, where past elements disappeared, it's not that disappearing turns into appearing, but that elements appear. Because elements appear completely, they are neither sequential nor aligned. Again, I think of the the Dharma position is like the arising, appearing moment of an element. So it's not about sequential or aligned, is like a series of things changing into other things. But from the perspective of just one moment, there isn't really like series. I mean, there is the appearance of series, but actually each moment is fully includes everything else. It's not really, there aren't really things as succession, successive moments. Disappearing is complete disappearing in the beginning, middle, and end. Disappearing meets disappearing with nothing taken away. The entire mind knows there is disappearing. Although elements disappear all of a sudden where past elements appeared, it's not that appearing turns into disappearing, but that elements disappear. Because elements disappear completely, they are neither sequential nor aligned. So there's this, the ocean seal. Actually, I think this is probably from the Avatamsaka Sutra again, because that's where the ocean seal concentration is, I'm pretty sure. Do you remember this, Harry? Where is this from?
No, it's in there.
It's in there. It might be other sutras too, but I think that's the samadhi known as the Ocean Mudra Samadhi is, I think, comes from this Avatamsaka Sutra. So, this very thing of non-sequentiality and elements appearing and disappearing, but without I, a self arising and disappearing, is quite similar to this 10 times of the Avatamsaka Sutra. Each time, including other times, but not just this standard linear past the future sequence that we usually understand things to happen as. So, back to Uji, Dogen says, Qingyuan is time, Huangpo is time, Jiangshi Matsu is time, Shuto is time. So these are just Zen ancestors who all lived around the same time. But the commentators often say they're not presented chronologically. Like you might think that since actually Shuto is the successor of Qingyuan, Matsu. Huangbo is two generations after Matsu. So you might say, wouldn't it make more sense to say Qingyuan is time, then Shuto is time, who's next, then Matsu, then Huangbo. But they're all just mixed up orders.
That's the point.
That's the point. I mean, at least several different commentators made the point that, like, they gave their dates and said, like, the fact that Dogen puts them, like, out of chronological order is playing with time. And he's saying, you know, first he's saying that these Zen ancestors are time. The ancient Zen ancestors, even in his time, they were ancient, but that they are moments of time being, and that we can't even, like, fix them in this order, in this linear order that we often think of them. They're just complete expressions this moment. They're complete manifestations of time, and they are time. So again, Dogen's putting all these things into equating all these things with time. So being, time. Being is time. Doubt is time. Remember from a couple classes ago, physical things are time. The self is time. All worlds are time. In the Buddha nature, classical Buddha nature is time. Now we can say the Buddhas and ancestors are time. mind is time. And here, we have another. Because self and other are already time, practice enlightenment is time. Mm-hmm. Practice and verification are both time. Being splattered with mud and getting wet with water to awaken others is also time. So that's just one of those Zen images. Often when you see, like, going into the mud is this... one of those strange Zen expressions for, like, being willing to get dirty in order to help others. You could say, like, for a great bodhisattva who's, like, looking down on lots of deluded beings and, like, I'm free from that stuff, from all that confusion now. I'm cool up here. It's saying, no, the bodhisattva actually goes into the mud of the world to help beings. Splattered with mud and water, or like all those images of the lotus, the pure lotus of a bodhisattva is growing out of the mud, free from the mud and yet in the mud at the same time. The flowers, like, totally pure, clean, unmuddy flower, but it's completely connected. Its roots are like embedded in the mud at the same time. And in this case, being splattered with mud and water. So like being fully immersed in the world for the benefit of others is time. Although the views of an ordinary person and the causes and conditions of those views are what the ordinary person sees, they are not necessarily the ordinary person's reality. The reality merely manifests itself for the time being as an ordinary person. I think this this section is a really neat one now, because it's talking about when we think that we don't understand what's going on here, actually. We don't understand what Dogen's saying and what is all this time anyway, and like things are just like they appear, aren't they? I mean, this is ridiculous. Why are we even talking this way? And like, how could we ever, if there is some like way that all these 10 times are interpenetrating, like that's way beyond me. These are like, as ordinary people, that's how we often think. So those views of the ordinary person and the causes and conditions of those views, like all our past karma that makes us think that we can't understand this. All that is what us ordinary people see. They are not necessarily the ordinary person's reality. Mm-hmm. Like there's another reality, even of us ordinary people, that's not what we see. Mm-hmm. The reality merely manifests itself for the time being as an ordinary person. So, you know, inconceivable flower ornament reality of infinite world systems in all directions interpenetrating and all these beings inconceivably being like liberated and freed every moment that you could say that reality. I mean, that's just a made up reality, but sometimes we hear that is reality. That reality merely manifests itself for the time being as an ordinary person like us right here. Like the time being, what we call the time being, is just a manifestation of this ultimate inconceivable reality. Because you think your time or your being is not reality, you believe that the 16-foot golden body is not you. So this great 16-foot golden Buddha body, that's got nothing to do with me. However, your attempts to escape from being the 16-foot golden body are nothing but bits and pieces of the time being. That's classic Dogen.
Bits and pieces of the time being.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is one of my favorite things that he does, is like your attempts to escape being that. So, like, for example, I realize the reason I appreciate these so much is like, he's talking to like the mind that's like reading Dogen, that's just like, this is way beyond me, that maybe he's even feeling himself as he's writing it. And that like it's beyond me, and like I'm not even going to think about the possibility of that this is it. Or this is like that I am a 16-foot golden body now. It's just like way out of like, I'm going to avoid that, that possibility at all costs. I'm not going there. We're not going there.
This makes me think about Kodo Sawaki. He says in some text, you cannot practice being a Buddha. Like, it's like when you say you practice being a thief. In the moment when you steal something, you call it.
Yeah. I call that sin too. Right. That's great. Yeah, you can't practice being a thief. It's like you're a thief at the moment you're stealing, or you're a Buddha at the moment that you're not holding on to anything, you could say. So, but one of our ways of holding on to things to prevent being a Buddha is to escape this possibility that we're Buddha.
Okay, so let's just stay here for a minute. Mm-hmm. So it has a little asterisk, and I looked it up. Bits and pieces.
Oh.
And in this version, they say that's moment by moment actualizing practice is causes. Okay, so the attempts to try to escape, the attempts to try to say, no, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
The attempt itself is...
Yes.
A moment by moment actualization.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
The attempt to escape is.
Yeah.
Actualizing practice. Yeah. How is that?
Because everything, without exception, is the time being. And the time being is actualizing the fundamental point and practice and verification. There's nothing excluded from the world of dependent co-arising, and its miraculous manifestations is, from the perspective of equality, it's like every dependent arising is equally a miraculous interdependent event. We could call that whole thing Buddha. So it's also similar to several paragraphs back about doubt. So. And Dogen does that in several different fascicles too about doubt. He says, doubt arising is itself the time being.
Sure, yeah. This is another version of doubt.
So it's another version, yeah.
Because you're doubting, your attempts to escape, that's your doubt.
Yeah. Your attempts to escape is also the time being. And,
and if you haven't yet confirmed this, you should look into it deeply.
So that's the other side. Yes. That like balances it out in a way, right? I'm just thinking of this other section that I want to bring up later too, because it relates, but continuous practice. Gyoji. By the way, the G there is the same as Uji G. So G means time, and Gyo in other senses means like practice. Well, in this case, it's translated as practice. So Gyo G, you could say like, you could be like Dogen and like take the literal meaning of these characters and say practicing time. Mm-hmm. Instead of continuous practice. Mm-hmm. But when you put these compounds together, it has that sense of observing, observances, gyoji together means like practices and observances. Like we have this book called the Gyoji Kihan. That's the Soto Shu ceremonial manual. It's called the Gyoji Kihan. So you could say it's the It's the continuous practice manual. Kihan also means like ritual observances, and gyogi also. I think they in English they call it now the standards observances of the Soto school. So I think it seems to have that connotation as a compound. Gyoji means like, and some translations say it's called like observances, and then it talks about all these examples of different ancestors doing various practices. But I like this translation of continuous practice, and you could even say practicing throughout time or practicing time, or even like doing time. Mm-hmm. You could actually, gyo can mean doing, going, or practicing. Yeah. And come back to this, but there is this section in here where Dogen's basically saying continuous practice is like manifesting all the time. But he says, even if you might try to ignore it in order to hide a crooked intention and escape from it, it being continuous practice. Even if you might try to ignore continuous practice and escape from continuous practice, this ignoring would also be continuous practice. Right, so that's the same thing, which he throws these lines, and as I say, they're one of my favorite parts, because it's really like, I mean, you can misuse a teaching like that and say, well, then everything's it, so why bother with anything? But I think he's speaking to sincere practitioners. Mm-hmm. I think these are written and spoken to mm-hmm. people who are really trying to practice and probably getting down on themselves mm-hmm. to some extent for like not being able to fathom what he's talking about and practice as they wish. Yes.
It sounds like the mind watching the mind, which is mm-hmm. the process. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How does it sound like the mind watching the mind? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of it is the process of the mind watching the mind.
Yeah, if you unpack, how would you like approach that in practice? You could say, okay, yeah, I'm trying to escape what's happening, and then noticing that, you know, just, and that is our zazen practice. We're just present with all our intentions and crooked intentions, as he says, of thinking like, how can I like get out of this? I should never have gotten into this in the first place, and like, I can't do this practice and all that stuff. And then just a moment of, oh, okay, just that thought itself, being aware of that thought as a complete expression, just like every other thought, completely identical to every other thought, like the thought of like, this is it, there's no doubt. You know, from the point of view of a dependent co-arising, a thought of no doubt is completely equal as a thought of doubt. If you kind of like you say, the mind looking at the mind, stepping back and looking, oh, that's just another thought or another intention to escape, is just like the intention to dive in. Yeah. And the way he says it, you know, you kind of have to read a little slowly to kind of get these points, but I think they're very beautiful, very practical, and, you know, I feel like he's really, it's not just abstract here, these are like real practice instructions for doubting and escaping people that always exist in the time being, in Dogen's time and our time. Because you think your time or your being is not reality, you believe that the 16-foot golden body of Buddha is not you. However, your attempts to escape from being the 16-foot golden body are nothing but bits and pieces of the time being. Each little bit and piece of attempt is a little bit and piece of manifested abiding dharma position of time being, of what is. Those who have not yet confirmed this should look deeply into it. In fact, that whole sentence is a quote from Lin Ji, who said, right now there's a true person of no position, no rank. It's the same character as Dharma position, actually, here, though. A true person of no position. And we could say in parentheses, meaning abiding in her Dharma position, which is actually no position. But Lindy just said, there's a true person of no position moving in and out through the portals of your face. Like, you know, this true person of no position is going in and out through your eyes and ears and nose and mouth all the time. And those who have not yet confirmed this, look deeply into this. And then the rest of the story, Lin Ji is like, I think it's something like a monk then comes forward, and he's talking to the assembly. A monk comes forward and says, the true person of no position, what's he like? And Lin Ji, who is, you know, known to be a kind of rough character, you know, grabbed him by the collar and pulled him close and said, speak. And the monk just hesitated and pushed him away and said, the true person of no position, just a pile of dry crap. Which is a Zen way of praising this person of no position. Because there is this true position, true person of no position, going out and in through the portals of everyone's face, whether one hesitates or not. But sometimes, Lin Ji likes to call that inconceivably amazing true person a pile of crap. Sometimes he said, Lin Ji's main successor, as Lin Ji was about to die, he said, you know, who would have thought that, you know, my treasury of the true Dharma eye would perish in this blind donkey. That was his great successor. So he was a rough guy. He talked that kind of way. But I think he was just seeing then, if people said, he called me dry crap. How could he? I thought he said it was his true person. And maybe he'd go to Lin Ji and said, like, why'd you call me dry crap? Will you apologize? And Lin Ji would say, grab and say, speak again! Yeah, this was, that was Lin Ji's style, and continues to be somewhat the style of the Rinzai school of Zen in Japan. So I thought it's a nice place for Dogen to say, shift back, you know. Your moments of doubt you're trying to escape are themselves bits and pieces of the time being. The audience relaxed. Ah, it's all included. We can't go wrong. Immediately, those who have not yet confirmed this, look! Yeah. And so it's just the other side. Just, you know, you must deeply confirm this.
I think that kind of pushing and pulling, though, is actually, I mean, it's very liberative because it jostles us out of thinking. You know, you can get really obsessed and down on yourself about with your attempts to escape.
Yes.
You know, but then you can also get complacent.
Oh, exactly.
I don't have to do anything. He's saying I'm okay.
Yep.
And that.
Yeah.
Both are true.
Yeah.
You have to stay on your toes.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice pair of sentences. Yeah. And it's, you might, you know, it's like, I think this is, again, for me, the joy of reading through this very slowly, I think you just kind of go through and it just seems like random different things, but I really see as we're discussing this, that those two, because as I say, like, I appreciate those places the most because it's when Dogen is the most giving. He's like, your doubt is it, and like, you're trying to escape is it, nothing's lacking. Those most giving places, he doesn't always do this, I don't think, but here he like comes right back with like, and be careful, you know.
Look deeply.
At the most generous giving, granting, you have it all. Now, keep it well. Those who have not yet confirmed this should look into it deeply. The hours of horse and sheep, which again, the Chinese hours are these 12 zodiac animals. The hours of the horse and sheep, which are arrayed in the world. Looking at the Japanese here, I think that this arrayed in the world is the place where he actually says abiding in the Dharma position. I don't think he's actually used that word, that phrase that appears in the Genjo Koan up to this point, even though we've been talking about it as that principle. I don't think he actually used the literal phrase here, but no, it's Ju Ho Yi, abiding in the Dharma position. But in this translation, it's very trying to align this with the Japanese. It might be the part arrayed in the world is abiding in its Dharma position, are actualized by the ascendings and descendings of the time being at each moment. I was a little disappointed that Kaz didn't like bring out that point so directly or use the same, what do we say, in the Genjo Koan, Kaz says, abiding in its phenomenal expression is this Ju Ho Yi. And just to, you know, show how these two, how he's using the phrase in both essays, I guess he translates with different translators, so that may be part of the difficulty of using the same phrase in each one. The rat is time, the tiger is time, sentient beings are time, Buddhas are time. You know, rat and tiger are other hours. And I'll just finish with one little reference here. Another time story is this is in Dogen's Ungraspable Mind, Shin Fukutoku. Dogen tells this story of Dushan, the Diamond Sutra commentator. Some of you might know this story. Dushan was the foremost of these Diamond Sutra scholars, and he carried around all his commentaries. There was no one like him. And he went to go practice with Longtan to basically, like, he heard there was a Zen teacher and he was going to refute him and kind of show how he didn't understand, because he's like the master of the Diamond Sutra of emptiness.
Danger.
Yes, danger, exactly. And it's one of Dushan stopped to catch his breath and saw an old woman. Danger. these old women are these, in these Zen stories, are very dangerous characters that really show up the lacking aspects of these Zen practitioners who think they're really great. So Dushan said, well, what do you do? And she said, I sell rice cakes. Usually these old women sell rice cakes. Dushan said, well, please sell me some. Old woman said, what will you do with them, Reverend? Dushin said, "I will eat them to refresh myself." She said, "What are you carrying?" Dushan said, "Haven't you heard of me?" "I am Diamond King Zhao. I specialize in the Diamond Sutra. There's no part of it I haven't mastered. These are important commentaries on the sutra." The old woman said, "May I ask you a question?" Dushan said, "Of course, ask me anything." The old woman said, "I was told that the Diamond Sutra says, past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, future mind is ungraspable. With which mind will you satisfy your hunger with these cakes? If you can answer, I'll give you some cakes. Otherwise, I won't." Dumbfounded, Dushan was unable to answer. The old woman abruptly flapped her sleeves and went away without giving Dushan any rice cakes. Dogen says, "How regrettable." And then later he goes on to meet Lungtan, and he's quite humbled by this encounter, so he's ready to be awakened by Lungtan. So we have past, present, and future mind, and the Buddha mind encompasses past, present, and future. Although this mind and the past, present, and future are not apart by even a hair breadth, if we separate them, they would be as distant as 18,000 miles. So there's another commentary on the time being of the Buddha mind. Includes past, present, and future. They're not separate by even a hair's breadth. If we separated them into like past mind and so on, present mind and future mind, that would be way off. So in the end, to kind of just finish off this tonight's discussion, while we're trying to think about the way these 10 times work together, the past, present, and future, Dogen's commentary on, he's kind of like giving instructions now. Like, if you meet an old rice cake selling woman like this and she asks you this question, he gives instructions now. He says, if you're asked about the past mind, say, ungraspable. When asked about the present mind, say, ungraspable. When asked about the future mind, say, ungraspable. Is that a joke?
That he's presuming to tell you what to say when you meet a T1? Is that a setup?
Maybe. Or maybe it's like, well, if I was there, I would have said.
Who knows what she would have said to him?
Yeah, we don't know. He goes, it's a kind of an interesting fascicle in itself because he goes through various different versions of what you could say to her.
Wow.
Yeah. But mind is ungraspable, which is the title of the fascicle, and but these three times, the past, future, and the present, are actually ungraspable. So that's the kind of overall context here as we're exploring this, as we get little glimpses and get a hold of this and that. Really, in the end, it's ultimately they're all ungraspable. The 10 times, the 3 times, the time being is ungraspable. May our intention equally extend to every being and place and time with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I bow to becoming.